As most of you probably know, I play a little bit of guitar. And that's not me being humble. I really just play a little bit of guitar. I have no real formal training in it. It's just something I've sort of picked up as a hobby. And when you learn something as a hobby, you really get an appreciation of the greatness of people who have mastered a particular instrument or who have mastered a particular style of music. And my interest lately has been in reading about and studying about the blues. And I still don't know a whole lot about the blues, but I know a couple of things. First of all, the blues is an American art form. It's an art form that started not as top-down, but started grassroots up. It was an outsider art form, and some of the white folk who went in the 30s and 40s to study the blues, when they went into the Deep South to learn about the blues, were arrested or warned off because blacks and whites weren't supposed to gather together in the Deep South. The blues is a kind of music that is all about troubles, hence the name. That's where blues comes from. It's about singing your troubles and offering up what you're having trouble with in life. Yet there's also a third thing I know about the blues, and that it's not just about troubles, but a lot of the blues comes out of spirituality. It's not just that you have troubles, but a lot of the blues comes out of gospel music and comes out of music from the Civil War, the time of the Civil War and before, music that slaves sang when they were working on the plantation. So there's a lot of songs that are about the gospel, a lot of songs about God, about the Jordan River, and of course, about Jesus Christ. And I think about this story from Mark chapter 7 really as a kind of blues song. You see, Jesus goes away from the crowds who are bugging him, goes away from all the people that he knows, and he is visited by a woman when he has sort of sequestered himself. He's sort of drawn away from the crowds, hoping to get some time by himself, and he's visited by a woman, and it's not just any woman. It's not somebody from his family, but it's a stranger, and it's a Greek woman, and what that means is that she doesn't have the same religion as Jesus does. It would be like the white researchers going into the Deep South to try and find out about the blues. And Jesus is traveling, it says in verse 24, to Tyre. And Tyre is a place that is a foreign nation. And it means that this woman had different gods. She doesn't believe in the God we're worshiping this morning. So when she comes to Jesus and says, "I need your help," this is rather surprising. And the woman is singing the blues. She's saying that her daughter is possessed by a demon, and she falls down at Jesus' feet. It doesn't mean she trips, but she falls down in a respectful posture of worship. And she begs him to do something, to cure, to heal her daughter. And in doing this, she violates two very strong conventions of the ancient world. First of all, the Jews and Greeks didn't have anything to do with one another. It was seen as sort of bad manners for Jews and Greeks to hang out together. They were separated by too many different things. They were separated by too many different cultures, the least of which was religion. But there were all sorts of other things that you just didn't, the two didn't mix together. But perhaps even worse, violation of manners and rules, is that single men and single women are not supposed to have anything to do with one another unless you're related. Unless you're related. And a single woman approaching a single man is a woman who doesn't care about her reputation, is the kind of woman who is labeled a prostitute. So Jesus essentially says to her, "We're not even supposed to be talking." This little bit about it's not right to take what's for the children and throw it to the dogs is a way of Jesus saying, you know, we're not really supposed to be having this conversation. You and I are supposed to have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Yet this is a problem, isn't it? The writer Stephen Covey says, the way we see a problem is the problem. And the way that Jesus looks at this problem is the problem, that Jews and Gentiles cannot under any circumstances mix, and that only prostitutes talk to men in public. That's not the way the world works. And that's what the woman says. She says, even the dogs under the table, even somebody like me, a Greek woman, can receive something from God. Anybody can receive something from God. I don't know if you've ever seen the television program Survivor. I've only ever seen it one time in my life. I saw the very finale episode of the very first season. I watched it, the very first season, a lot of my friends were watching it. They said, you got to watch this show. It's amazing. It's incredible. And I watched the last episode of the very first season. And I tuned in on the last night. And what happens in Survivor is they start out with 16 contestants. They put them on a somewhat deserted island and have them do all these sort of challenges. And then it gets down to the final four. And then it gets down to the final two. And then finally one person remains the survivor and wins the $1 million prize. And the first season of Survivor, the thing that I was amazed about in the finale was I saw a game that rewarded the worst behavior in human beings I had ever seen. It was a kind of television show that rewarded people for not liking each other. You remember the guy who won, Rich? He did terrible in all of the games that had anything to do with cooperation. He only did well in the games where he was winning over other people. He did absolutely awful. They had one part of the show where you had to answer questions based on what you knew about the other contestants. He didn't know anything about any of the other people because he was only in the game, as he said, to win the $1 million. And the show rewarded him for his quote-unquote bad behavior. The one contestant, the second place contestant, the one who did not win the $1 million, Kelly, she was stronger at many of the competitions. She actually knew a lot more about her fellow players than this Rich did. And this game was rather amazing to me. And it seems to me that Survivor, and that was the last time I watched it. I kind of figured that after that I didn't need to watch anymore. And it seemed to me that this game show had sort of taken the phrase that we have, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and made it into a television program, had made it into a reality show. And that's exactly what Jesus is talking about. This is a dog-eat-dog world. He even uses the term dogs. He says, we're not supposed to be talking with one another. Male versus female, Jews versus Greeks, rich versus poor, we're not supposed to have anything to do with one another. And the woman's reply is that even the dogs get the crumbs under the table. In other words, there is abundance in God's kingdom for all people. Now think about what she's actually saying. She's saying that you can never run out of love. You can never run out of healing. You can never run out of prayers. There are all sorts of things in life that we talk about shortages of money or food or oil or any number of things, gasoline shortages. But you can never run out of community or sharing or peace. And what would that even look like to say you had run out of peace? I've just run out of peace today. I have no more peace in my heart. I was trying to picture this last night, and what would it be to run out of family? You know, the dad comes home from work one day, kicks off his shoes, he picks up the newspaper, he looks at his kids playing on the floor, his wife is in the kitchen and she's making supper, and he says, you know what, I think we've just run out of family. I think I have to go and find myself. And then he walks out the door and is never heard from again. Now, obviously that's an absurd example, and perhaps you might object and say that does happen. People get divorced. It doesn't happen exactly in the way I sort of explained it there, but it does happen. Well, I'm here to tell you that the blues song tells us that there are always crumbs to be picked up from under the table. There is always hope. We are never, never going to run out of the virtues that God gives us in the Bible. God will give them to us until the end of the age. We will never run out of them, even if they're only crumbs. In Galatians chapter 5, verse 22, it says that God will give us joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, and we will never run out of those virtues. Just as the slaves never gave up hope, singing the blues songs of freedom, just as they never gave up singing the gospel songs of throwing off their chains and being led over the promised land to freedom. You can never give up because God never gives up. So the question I put before you this morning is, what are you waiting for? Being a Christian is about making a difference and sharing that abundance, sharing those crumbs that fall from the table, is about singing that song of salvation and redemption over and over and over again. In the 19th century in England, there was a very well-known criminal who was hanged. His name was Charlie Peace. He was led in a procession up to the gallows. And he was followed. The person immediately behind him was the priest with the Book of Common Prayer, reciting the prayers as they're marching up to the gallows. And the priest read out of the prayer book the following sentence: "Those who die without Christ experience hell. And hell is the pain of forever dying without the release which death itself can bring." That was one of the prayers that the priest was saying as they were going up to the gallows. And when he got to that sentence, Charlie Peace stopped the whole procession. He stopped. He was at the head of the procession. He stopped and he turned around and he looked at the priest, stood nose to nose with him and said, "Do you really believe that?" And the priest was sort of taken aback by this. And he took a moment, he stammered, he says, yes, I believe I do. And Charlie Peace says, "Well, I don't, but if I did, I would get down on my hands and knees and I would crawl all over Great Britain, even if it was paved with broken glass, to save even one soul from the hell you're talking about." Think about that for a minute. Tony Campolo, one of the greatest living preachers in America, says, "If you had the cure for cancer and you kept it to yourself, you would not be a moral person. If you knew the formula for a drug that would cure AIDS or Parkinson's and did not share it, you would be deserving of moral condemnation." Yet we Christians know the cure for sin and death, the cure for hell, and it's Jesus. It's the crumbs that God gives us, that God pours out abundantly upon us. And Jesus has given it abundantly to you. And it will never run dry. What are we waiting for? Amen.